Welcome to Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor, where conversations explore the inner frontier. What is it I can say I know and why? Who am I really? Is there such a thing as free will? How does the human mind differ from the programmed artificial intelligence being built today? How are thinking and destiny connected? Is mind really capable of being our best healer or our worst slayer? Where does the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax leave off and the mind begin? These are just some of the questions Eldon and his guests take on in this next fascinating hour. You won't want to miss any of it.
Welcome to another hour of Mind Matters, an hour, as we say around here, devoted to the questions of consciousness, mind, and all that might arise out of this inquiry and somehow, in some way, really maybe matter. From my studio in Spokane, Washington, through the marvel of technology, we are coming to you wherever you might be in the world, live across the internet and in the Seattle area on your radio's FM high-definition dial. We have what I believe will be a truly great show today, and I hope you'll stay tuned. But first, I want to remind you that beginning September 9th, that's next week, our show will be on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Please plan to join us then. Now, to today's subject, mediums. In my opinion, the study of consciousness must include all of the phenomena attached to this stuff we call mental. The fact is, if individual consciousness survives the death of the physical body, then the nature of consciousness is certainly more than the sum of the parts, as reductionists would have it. It is also much more than the popular mental life interpretation known as the computational model of mind. Indeed, assuming that the personal consciousness does survive what we call death, then is it reasonable to believe that disincarnate beings communicate through various means with those living on this side? Last week, our show was all about electronic voice captures that, figuratively speaking, are not of this world. Some of these captures seem to address conditions on the other side, and some seem to be simple, casual remarks. In recent shows, we have looked at the science behind the survival of consciousness and the existence of the spirit world. And as Dr. Leo Kim and Dr. Craig Hogan explained, the evidence is creating a paradigm shift in science. Well, this week, we're going to look at mediums. When someone has a near-death experience and they tell us about a quarter high above the operating table that no one from the ground can see, and then, as Dr. John Lerma informed us, the coin was found exactly where it was described as being covered in dust, it's hard to dismiss this as evidence that consciousness continues beyond so-called death. Remember when Dr. John Turner shared the story of a young woman clinically dead that was totally underwater for 17 minutes? And therefore, we know the brain could not get oxygen. In other words, she had to be dead in every sense of our medical understanding, and yet she survived to tell us of her near-death experience. In past weeks, we have heard about angels, the afterlife, and our pets. OBEs, or out-of-body experiences, remote viewing, and a host of other subjects pertaining to the extension of consciousness. As we near an end to this aspect of our consciousness inquiry, that is, that personal consciousness survives death and is not limited to the organ brain, it's appropriate that we turn to that age-old spiritual tradition known as mediums. Can we ascertain any evidence that consciousness survives from this mode of inquiry? Or in opposition, to play devil's advocate, as we often do around here, the structuralist would argue that there is no ontological or epistemological basis to our being, our ideas, and so forth. Further, there is no reality in metaphysics. Everything is ultimately reducible to some structure that arises from our environment, our socio-economic relationships, etc. And this structure is mathematical and can be plotted on a Cartesian coordinated graph. Like the zeros and ones that make up the magnificence of a beautiful, recorded, musical, compact disc, the very nature of humanness is a matter of the differences as expressed in a structural system not unlike that of the binary system underlying the music we hear coming from that compact disc. In fact, they would have us believe in the rather Marxian notion that consciousness in itself arises from a hidden structure that exists only within the anatomical nature of Homo sapiens sapien. Well, I know what I think about all this. What do you think? We want your ideas, thoughts, and questions, so join us. You can do that by phoning toll-free, 877-230-3062, or by entering our chat room. Just go to www.ctrchat.com from anywhere in the world and enter your comments and questions. My partner, Ravinder, is here in the studio with me. Say hello to everyone out there, Ravinder. Great originality, isn't it? She monitors the chat room during our broadcast. She will greet you and get your questions and comments on the air. Each week, we try to bring you interesting subjects that ask big questions. Each week, we work to bring you leading authors, researchers, visionaries, and the like to discuss their take on these matters. This week is no exception. My guest today is Michael Timm. In his book, The Articulate Dead, Michael examines several of the best mediums of yesteryear and the scientific research surrounding them. A number of very intriguing stories unfold, including spirits directing an archaeologist in the uncovering of the ruins of Glastonbury Abbey, spirits leading a researcher to crosses buried by American Indians, a deceased author completing his books through a medium, a Titanic victim coming back to tell about his new environment, and an afterlife researcher continuing his work after dying, to name just a few. Michael is vice president of the Academy of Spirituality and Paranormal Studies, Incorporated, and editor of the Academy's quarterly magazine, The Searchlight. He has been a freelance journalist for more than 50 years. His articles on paranormal subjects have appeared in publications such as Fate, Mysteries, Nexus, Atlantis Writing, Christian Parapsychologist, Vital Signs, Venture Inward, Two Worlds, Dark Lord Alternatives, and a whole lot more. We are honored and grateful to have Michael Timm join us today. Welcome to Mind Matters, Michael.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure indeed. Why don't we just start off with how and why you became interested in mediumship and psychical research?
Well, I actually became interested in psychical research. I'm getting an echo back. Is that coming through? I'm not sure if you're experiencing that problem.
I'm not detecting the echo. I think we're okay, Michael, but we'll work on that on this end. Rebecca will look into that. You just go ahead and tell us how you got started.
Talking. Yeah. I first became interested in reincarnation. I was around 1989, I think. I was in the Washington train station and looking for a book to read. I didn't belong to any religion at the time. I grew up a Catholic and fell away from the Catholic Church, I think, back around age 30, age 32 or so. And I was in my early 50s at the time and felt I needed to find some sort of belief system and picked up a book on reincarnation, Edgar Cayce. So I started reading more and more about Edgar Cayce and reincarnation. And from there I went to near-death experiences and became very interested in that subject. And then in 1999, my wife and I were visiting London, and we were out for a walk, and we happened to come across a Victorian house with the sign Spiritualist Association of Great Britain. And we wondered what it was all about, so we walked in to see what was happening there, and it was about 2:30 in the afternoon. And we found out that they had clairvoyant readings every day at 3 o'clock and 6 o'clock. And they cost £6, I think it was, per person. So we decided to wait until 3 o'clock and go in for the clairvoyant reading. Well, we did. We went in, and there are about 15 other people in there, and the medium, the clairvoyant, comes in. Middle-aged woman got up in front of us, and she starts going around the room, pointing to certain persons. Say, I've got somebody here who's telling me he was your father or mother or brother or sister, whatever, friend. And everyone in the audience seemed to know what she was talking about. It was very evidential to them. And then she came to my wife and she said, I've got somebody here. It's a father figure, but it's not your father. I believe it's an uncle. And he's telling me that everyone said you look very much like him. In fact, it's a family joke. I didn't know anything about this joke at the time, but my wife's Uncle George had died about 2 years earlier, and it was very evidential to my wife because everybody joked that she looked more like her Uncle George than she did like her father. And then the clairvoyant said, I've got an elderly woman here who is a grandmother figure, and she's telling me that you forgot your mother's birthday, and it just so happened that we left home. I live in Hawaii. We left Hawaii on her mother's birthday, and my wife forgot to call her and wish her a happy birthday and give her a present. So that was very evidential in itself. But, you know, little trivial things, but they were evidential. And she said a few more things that meant something to my wife, but then she came to me and she said, I've also got somebody named George here, but it's not the same George that was just communicating with the lady next to you. She sort of struggled. She said, I can't, you know, she couldn't really get anything from him as to who he was, and I couldn't think of any George that was in spirit that, you know, who it could be. I had two friends named George, but as far as I knew, they were still alive. And I had my father had an Uncle George that had died, I mentioned him, and she said she didn't think so. That he was on the same level as me, a contemporary of mine. And she couldn't get anything more. So I went away that night thinking I was the only failure in the whole room because everybody else seemed to get something very evidential. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we went driving around England and Scotland over the next week to 10 days, and we came back to London, and I decided to go back just, see if I could get a better reading. And my wife went shopping at Harrods at the time, and I went by myself, different medium this time. An elderly lady, about 80 years old, came in with a walker, about a dozen people, a dozen or 15 people, and she seemed to be even better than the first clairvoyant. She was getting more detail, getting some names and so forth. And she comes, she points to me and she said, I've got somebody here. He's standing right behind you with his hands on his shoulder. And he said, his name is George. So needless to say, I was stymied and shocked. I said, I shook my head. I said, I don't know who that would be. And so she closed her eyes and she said, he's telling me that he's a former colleague, and he passed into spirit about 20 years ago of a blood-related disease. And he says that he's glad you now have a job that you like. It still didn't mean anything to me. I was expecting if somebody was going to come through for me, there was going to be my deceased brother or grandfather or grandmother mm-hmm. or somebody. And so I just didn't, I just couldn't identify this person. And I shook my head and, she went on to the next person. And it wasn't until I was on my way back to pick up my wife that afternoon that it suddenly dawned on me that this particular George was a co-worker with a company that I worked for 20 years earlier, 1979. He died about a year after I left the company. I heard about it, but I didn't know what he died of. He was not a great friend or anything, but we went out to coffee, two or three times a week we'd have coffee together. And when I got back to Hawaii, I called a friend that used to work with the company. I said, what did George die of? And he said, leukemia. So there was the blood-related disease. So he's a former colleague. He passed into spirit, she said, 20 years earlier, which this was 1999 that I was there, and he died in 1979. And the thing that I used to talk to George about all the time was the job. I just really didn't like the job I had, and he knew I didn't like it. So when the comment was made that he was glad that I had a job that I now liked, that, in retrospect, was also very meaningful. So, you know, there are four very evidential things there that came through, and that just sort of got me interested in the whole subject. I started reading about it, and the more I read, the more I became interested, and that eventually led to a library of about 500 books on mediumship and my book.
Wow. So this all started for you just 10 years ago.
Mediumship part 10 years ago. I actually, you know, the near-death experiences and reincarnation started about 20 years ago.
Okay. In the foreword to The Articulate Dead, you address the advance of science free of spiritualness and that. Indeed, I believe you cited three television specials that you watched in 2005 when you were working on your book and indicated that not one of them addressed the real possibility of an afterlife. I really enjoy how you write, what your writing style is. You made certain observations and comments with respect to the absence of science or the absence of, I should say, not science, but the spiritual side to these shows. Please share your view with our audience on that.
Yeah, well, the three shows I mentioned, they all seem to focus on, you know, is there a God? And they don't really discuss the question of the afterlife. That there seems to be an assumption that if you find God, then you've got to find the afterlife. But you're never going to find, you know, solid evidence of God. You can find evidence of the afterlife and go and, you know, once you have that evidence, then infer a God. So what bothered me about these three programs is they just focused on searching for God instead of searching for the afterlife. And my feeling is, you know, that's deductive approach that, you know, if there's a God, then there's an afterlife, whereas if you take the inductive approach, which is first find the afterlife and then you get to God, it's a much more intelligent and logical approach to the whole thing. But nobody seems to want to do that.
You know, and I share that, of course, and I'm going to read from your book now and ask you to comment on that briefly before we go to commercial. Mm-hmm. You say, clearly, we live in an era of moral decadence, a time of egocentricity, intolerance, hatred, hypocrisy, disorder, flux, strife, chaos, and fear. We have become hedonistic materialists, consumed with the pursuit of pleasure and sensory gratification, making merry with intoxicants and drugs, reveling in the Playboy philosophy. Why did you say that? What did you mean by it? Insight to that.
Yeah, well, I've been around for, I'm 72 years old now, and I've been around for a number of decades, and I just, you know, people will tell you, well, you know, you used to do the same thing that the kids do today and everything else, and, it's not the same. I mean, I look around at the younger generation, and I just, you know, shake my head in disgust, I guess, and wonder how, you know, all their morals are, you know, going to play out in 20 or 30 years and how their children will grow up. It just seems a very hedonistic way of life that we've grown into, and I think it's all a result primarily of television. The junk that they have on television now just leads people to a hedonistic way of life, and some of the very innocent programs are the worst offenders as far as I'm concerned. I mean, the program Friends to me was a prime example. I mean, it just promoted sleeping around and the idea that life is all about having fun. And
I couldn't share your view on television any more enthusiastically. Indeed, you know, my work has largely been about just how asleep people have become as a result of, you know, what I call mind programming. We're going to take a commercial break. As soon as we get back, we're going to pick this conversation up with a question from our chat room. I'll give you a head start on that. The question basically wants to know where people find themselves right after they die. My guest today is Michael Timm. You're listening to Mind Matters on Contact Talk Radio in the Seattle area. You can tune in live over KRWM 106.9 on your FM high-definition channel 3 dial. or from anywhere in the world, tune in by going to contacttalkradio.com. My guest today, again, Michael Tim, and we're discussing mediums. We'll be right back after this break.
Life? Waking up tired? Unable to focus? At last, a new approach for the treatment of stress-related disorders. It's called CES, a revolutionary new technology that is safe, effective, and easy to use. Best of all, it has none of the negative side effects of drugs. CES has been validated by a major study at the Harvard School of Public Health. Its benefits demonstrated in dozens of independent research studies conducted at the National Institute of Health. And this new technology is now available in CES Ultra, the most effective and cost-effective unit now on the market. So why endure another stress-filled day? Increase your mental energy. Elevate your mood. CES Ultra can make the difference. It is available on a 30-day, no-questions-asked, money-back guarantee. Call 866-YES-FOR-CES or go to CESUltra.com to find out more about this breakthrough technology. CES Ultra, the doorway to good health and a balanced life.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the hosts and for others.
By special arrangement, Eldon has made available his best-selling Essential Pillars of Success at unheard-of savings. The principles in Essential Pillars have worked for thousands of people around the world and are guaranteed to work for you. Essential Pillars of Success consists of 9 programs on 8 CDs and comes with a book that explains how and why it's so easy to self-sabotage our best efforts and provides a roadmap for correcting those thought patterns and beliefs. It also includes a booklet teaching the learning strategies involved in choosing the programs or scripts that run through your mind. The entire mind conditioning set normally sells for $243.50, but is yours today for only $88. Plus, you will receive hundreds of dollars in bonus tools to further assist you. Call 1-800-964-3551 today for details.
Plan to attend the Hay House ICANN Conference in Tampa, Florida? Join your favorite authors in beautiful Tampa for a life-changing retreat, the I Can Do It Tampa 2009 Conference from November 19th to the 22nd, 2009, can be booked now at a reduced price. Everyone is talking about Hay House's ICANN events. Don't be left out. Get your tickets early. This event features leading visionaries from around the world. A short list includes your Contact Talk Radio Mind Matters host, Eldon Taylor, plus Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, Christine Northrup, Sonia Choquette, Greg Braden, Joan Borisenko, Bruce Lipton, Bernie Siegel, James Twyman, and Brian Weiss, to name but a few. In all, you will have the opportunity to meet and hear 30 of today's best-selling authors. For more information and or to get your tickets now, visit hayhouse.com. Enjoy spiritual nourishment for your soul. And again, go to hayhouse.com.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, I'm Eldon Taylor. The show's Mind Matters. My guest is Michael Tim. Before we left for break, we were discussing Mr. Tim's book, The Articulate Dead. We proposed a question that came out of our chat room, which is essentially, Michael, the question is, where do people find themselves right after they die?
Well, I think it depends on how the person lives in the first place. Things that comes out of mediumship and or, you know, commonly called spiritualism is that, you know, there is no horrific hell or humdrum heaven. It's not a dichotomous situation in which you either go to heaven or go to hell. That spiritualism teaches that, you know, there are many realms. As Jesus said, there are many mansions in my Father's house. And the word mansions, I think it can be better translated from the Greek to realms or planes or whatever. And there are two types of mediumship. There's the evidential kind that I talked about with George, where you get little bits of evidential information that just sort of confirm that, you know, the spirits are there. And then there's what's called spiraling information, where you get some real wisdom. And some of the spiraling mediumship has told us that there's sort of a moral specific gravity that you develop over the years, that all of your good deeds and your selfish deeds are all somehow brought together in your aura or your energy body, whatever you want to call it. And when you die, you have a mortal specific gravity that results from that, and you go to a realm that you're qualified for. And then once you're in that realm, that you continue to advance on the other side.
Yeah, your book actually offers a good deal of insight as to those levels or spheres, if you will, of the spirits. You report that the spirits in the lower sphere are better able to make mechanical movements than spirits that actually would be elevated. Do you have a theory about why that is?
Well, it's my understanding is because they're closer in vibration. The whole, you know, spiritual world is based upon, and material world, I guess, is based upon vibration, and that the lower level spirits are vibrating at much the same level as we are in the physical realm, and so they can communicate better than the more advanced spirits who are vibrating at a much higher rate.
Gotcha.
And much of the communication tells us that the higher spirits, when they want to get through, they have to use lower spirits to sort of relay on the information.
I want to get into this, some of the actual stories that you share, because they're incredible stories, and they challenge, they basically challenge any intelligent being in a way that, if, as you state in your book, a preponderance of evidence or beyond the reasonable doubt, you have to accept that this is real. But before we do that, it's a common question to think about why or what is the motive that a medium may have. And indeed, you know, some would even question the sanity behind such things as a seance. But in your research, did you turn up a principal motive for why spirits on the other side would want to communicate through mediums?
Well, supposedly it all began in 1848 with the so-called Rochester knockings outside of Rochester, New York, a little hamlet called Hydesville with the Fox sisters. Before that, there was definitely mediumship, the clairvoyant and the clairaudient type of mediumship that we see on TV, you know, these days with Lisa Williams and John Edward and James von Prague and so forth. But this was the first time that we had really experienced a physical connection to it. That somehow the spirits learned to manipulate matter and to communicate by raps or taps. And they communicated, in one case, the spirit communicated that this was all figured out by Benjamin Franklin and Emanuel Swedenborg in the spirit world. They figured out how to communicate with us. And so from 1848 on, this gradually, you know, the methods of communication gradually evolved. There was physical mediumship where there were materializations and a lot of communication by tables, one of the common methods was a table would levitate just off the ground, and then the table would tilt for each letter of the alphabet. You know, three tilts was a C, or, five tilts an E. And so it was a long, laborious process to receive communication in that way, and it gradually became more refined. We found trans mediums and direct voice mediums and so forth that really, you know, expedited the process. So they were all learning how to do it. But as far as the mediums themselves, I mean, there's a misconception that, you know, they're some kind of saints. They just happen to be people, you know, normal people who have some kind of anomaly And one of the reasons I believe that we don't see this type of mediumship anymore is that, or as much as we used to, we still find it, but not as much as we did 100 years ago, is that a lot of these mediums developed after some childhood disease in which their temperatures got up to 106 degrees, or, you know, very, very high temperatures, and then they when they recovered, they were suddenly, you know, mediumistic. So it was just, they're just sort of, you know, it's a freakish type thing that somehow that there was damage to their brain that opened up some portal that, you know, permitted this.
Some compensating factor that the rest of us don't have opened or developed, I take it.
Right.
Do you have a theory on what that might be, or should we leave it right there?
I don't know. I don't have a theory. I mean, they say it's somehow related to the pineal gland, but I'm not a physiologist or a physician, so I haven't gone beyond that. In some respects, they say it's hereditary. Some of it is hereditary, but you know, we find the same thing in near-death experiences. People who have had near-death experiences all of a sudden become psychic or mediumistic in different ways because of a trauma. And the point I didn't make earlier, you know, is that we don't have as many today because we've sort of eradicated all these childhood diseases, diphtheria and German measles and whatever else that caused high fevers in their childhood. So that is one of the reasons we don't hear much of it today.
Do you think that it also has to do with the fact that so much of a, shall we say, charlatan label has been placed over mediumship of the kind that had knockings and seances, Ouija boards and tables that tipped and so forth? Maybe even the P.T. Barnum contribution, to making the entire thing kind of a circus event.
I agree. I mean, that was a big part of it. I think I listed 7 reasons in the book, and one of them is that, or another one is that we just don't have the quiet time today that people did then. I mean, we have TV and radio, and most of the best mediumship was before TV and radio, and people just sat around and played with Ouija boards or gathered in social circles, and you know, they frequently waited, you know, they sit around in a seance, they wait for an hour for something to happen. I just, you know, I can't conceive of people waiting that long. I bought a Ouija board about 5 years ago and brought it home and you know, tried something, and I waited 10 minutes. After 10 minutes, I gave up. I said, you know, not going to work. So
Our world of instant gratification.
Yeah. Hamlin Garland was one of the early psychical researchers. He sat with one medium for 4 hours before anything happened, and that just sort of blows my mind that, you know, he would wait that long to before some phenomena would begin to, you know, develop.
Yeah, do you think intention might have anything to do with it? In addition, I mean, I know that in this area of EVP, there's this whole thought system that believes that if you're going to be successful at recording one of these voices from the other side, you have to basically, you know, intend to do that, maybe place the intention on your recorder and so forth. Do you think that has anything to do with it?
I think so, and I think also that the negativity of the researchers can also defeat the phenomena. I mean, that's pretty clear from many of the documented cases that you'd get a very skeptical researcher. And I mean, skepticism is fine, but if they were out to debunk the person, their whole intent was to debunk them. They just created a negativity that couldn't be overcome. Now,
yeah,
how that all plays out in the spirit world, I don't know. I know that Daniel Douglas Holm, who was one of the better known mediums in the during the late 1800s. He was being investigated by Sir William Crookes, who was a very well-known physicist and chemist in England. And Holm told Crookes that on Derby Day in England, he said he could not produce anything because the spirits told him there was too much negativity in the air with all the drunkenness and gambling going on.
So that would suggest that perhaps there's a lot more to this collective M field of a Rupert Sheldrake than just learning Morse code in a dedicated room. I mean, you're implying that this thought field, if we will, and I'll put that in quotation marks, is generated live like a radio signal and for all intent and purposes can interfere with this kind of communication?
That's my understanding, yeah.
Wow. We have another question from the chat room, and I don't want to monopolize your time, so I'm going to turn to this question. Question is, are you telling me that they have to learn how to speak to us?
I assume by they mean the spirits have
they mean
to learn
the spirits,
how to speak
yeah.
to us. That's my
yeah.
understanding. Many of the best mediums, like Leonora Piper and Gladys Osborne Leonard, they had what are called spirit controls, which are, in effect, mediums on the other side. And the information that came through to a number of the researchers, like Sir Oliver Lodge, who was one of Britain's greatest physicists, and Sir William Barrett and so forth, was that these spirit controls were necessary. They had to relay the information from the spirit through the medium. In effect, what would happen is, in the case of Leonora Piper, she would go into a trance, and supposedly her consciousness would leave her body, and then her spirit control, who initially was, his name was Dr. Finet, said to be a French physician back in the early 1800s, he would take over her body, and then he would speak, relaying on information from the deceased person, because the deceased person didn't know how to take over her body, or they didn't want the person to take over her body because there were a lot of risks connected with it. And so occasionally there was somebody who could figure out how to do it, and Dr. Finet would step aside and let the person take over Leonora's body and communicate directly. But most of the time, 90% of the time, he had to relay the messages from the spirit world. And a lot of it is thought transference. I mean, people you see people like, as I mentioned, the TV mediums today, John Edward and James von Prague and Lisa Rich is who I was trying to think of. They don't get names all the time. Lisa Williams gets names more often than John Edward or James von Prague, because I think she's both clairaudient and clairvoyant. She can hear things, whereas John Edward seems to be more clairvoyant. He sees symbols, so he doesn't get names. It's my understanding he explained at one time on TV in one of his books that, for example, he wanted to get the name George. The communicating spirit had to show him a picture of, that he was familiar with. It was St. George on horseback or something. So whenever he saw a picture, in his mind, he saw a picture of St. George on horseback, then he knew the name George was coming through. So it's a thought world, and for the clairvoyant type medium, it's a matter of getting the symbol correct, whereas somebody like Lisa Williams, she actually hears them sometimes, but not all the time.
Wow. All right, we're going to have to take a break. When we come back, I want to just get right in there to what are the most interesting or most credible mediums out there, and what have you found by way of just absolutely compelling evidence? And reading your book, there are several that come to my mind, but I want you to tell us about those. You're listening to Mind Matters on Contact Talk Radio. I'm Eldon Taylor. The show's Mind Matters. My guest today is Mr. Michael Tim, and we're discussing mediums and his wonderful book, The Articulate Dead. We'll be right back after these words from our sponsors, I guess. These commercial messages. There we go. Bye-bye.
Plan to attend the Hay House ICANN Conference in Tampa, Florida? Join your favorite authors in beautiful Tampa for a life-changing retreat, the ICANN Do It. Tampa 2009 conference from November 19th to the 22nd, 2009 can be booked now at a reduced price. Everyone is talking about Hay House's ICANN events. Don't be left out. Get your tickets early. This event features leading visionaries from around the world. A short list includes your Contact Talk Radio Mind Matters host, Eldon Taylor, plus Wayne Dyer, Louise Hay, Christine Northrup, Sonia Choquette, Greg Braden, Joan Borisenko, Bruce Lipton, Bernie Siegel, James Twyman, and Brian Weiss, to name but a few. In all, you will have the opportunity to meet and hear 30 of today's best-selling authors. For more information and or to get your tickets now, visit hayhouse.com. Enjoy spiritual nourishment for your soul. And again, go to hayhouse.com.
Did you know that you can rate this show on iTunes? The show you're listening to right now. It's true. You can leave your thoughts about the show, the topic, the guest. You can even leave a suggestion. Then, before you leave, rate the show. The hosts love hearing from you, so next time you download this show from iTunes, leave your thoughts and rate the show for the host and for others.
Change has never been easier. InnerTalk is the patented and proven effective technology developed by Eldon Taylor and researched at leading institutions throughout the world. In repeated double-blind scientific studies, this technology has shown itself to aid in many different domains ranging from weight loss to learning. Eldon has developed over 300 titles and some have been showcased as free MP3 files on his InnerTalk website. If you haven't already witnessed the power of this mind-training technology, then go to www.innertalk.com and try a free download today. You'll notice the change, and the change will come from the inside out, seemingly like magic. It's not magic, of course. It just seems that way.
Choices and illusions. How did I get where I am, and how do I get where I want to be? Is the book to read when you feel stuck? Same old, same old. Try and try again, and yet nothing seems to work. Choices and Illusions provides a clear path to self-liberation and personal empowerment that has caused leading visionaries to extol this book as the one everyone should read in our time. John Edward puts it this way: read this book. We are living at a time when people are searching for answers to fundamental questions in their lives. This book can be, if applied, the roadmap to personal enlightenment. Get your copy today wherever books are sold.
Do you wonder why things in your life simply do not work? Do you question why you do some things? Do you feel that you are your own worst enemy at times? Do you want more? Are you a prisoner, trapped in the circularity of your patterns and thoughts? If any of this applies, then you want the new book, Mind Programming, by the New York Times best-selling author, Eldon Taylor. Mind Programming reveals just how much all of us have been programmed to fail, to consume, to fight, to get even, to feel guilty, and so much more. This may be the most important book you ever read. Take back your power today. Get Mind Programming wherever books are sold.
Welcome back. If you just joined us, I'm Eldon Taylor. The show's Mind Matters. My guest is Michael Tim, and this is Contact Talk Radio. And if you're listening to some of the radio, you're just listening to the wrong place, you know? Before we left for break, we were discussing Mr. Tim's book, The Articulate Dead. And I had asked him to be prepared when we got back from break to tell us about the most compelling evidence and the most convincing mediums of the past, as he has explained them in his book. And so with that, I want first, before Michael does that, I want to remind all of you that the book is The Articulate Dead. You want to get this book. It's available at Amazon. And maybe you want to look at Michael's blog. So you do a Google on Michael E. Tim. It's T-Y-M-N. And you'll find his blog. It's the first thing that comes back. And he's got some great articles there. Dee had a very fascinating article. We may get a chance to talk to him about on organ transplants. But I'll let you go out, take a look at his blog. Michael, tell me, what's the most convincing medium? what's the most exciting evidence?
Okay, well, the three big mediums in the field of psychical research that were subject to study were Leonora Piper, who I already mentioned, Gladys Osborne Leonard of England, and Elaine Garrett of Ireland, who actually moved to the United States and spent most of her career in the United States. But those three, Eileen Garrett, I should say, not Elaine, Eileen Garrett, and there's no single case that, you know, is so much better than the others. As Sir Oliver Lodge mentioned, it's the cumulative case that really, you know, convinced him, not just one single case. But the one that comes to mind, I list as probably my number one case, is referred to as the R-101 crash. And this one is not even in my book. This is something that... I neglected to put in my book. I knew about it, but for some reason I didn't have all the documentation. But back in 1930, the British built a large airship called referred to as the R-101. This was a dirigible, and it on its maiden voyage from England, they set out for India, Calcutta or Bombay, I forget where they were headed for, but. Anyway, it went down over just north of Paris, and most of the crew members were killed, included a number of dignitaries that were aboard. And about 4 days after the ship went down, a couple of people were sitting with Eileen Garrett, hoping to contact somebody else, but all of a sudden this voice came through. She was a trans medium. She'd go into a trance, and then a person would take over her body and speak through her. And it turned out to be, he identified himself as Flight Lieutenant H. Carmichael Irwin, who was the captain of the R-101. And he explained in detail what happened before the flight, gave terminology that, you know, only somebody connected with you know, this type of thing would know that Eileen Garrett, unless she did a lot of research into dirigibles and so forth, would not know or not have the vocabulary for that. But he gave detailed information on it. And then, so that this word got back to the British command, and they sent a Major Oliver Villiers out to sit with her. He went in, he didn't identify himself as an officer or didn't tell her why he was there or anything else. He didn't want to bias the results, so he just went in as an average person, and all of a sudden this flight commander, Irwin, starts speaking again, giving detailed information to Villiers as to why the R-101 went down. And it was very evidential to him. He reported it to the headquarters, but they said, you know, this wouldn't be... admissible in a court of law, so we can't use that information.
Right.
But when you read the details of the case, it's just hard to discount that. I mean, the pseudo skeptics, the debunkers, will come up with theories as to why they think Eileen Garrett might have had this information that she had an undercover agent here or there or whatever. I mean, there's always. So the debunkers always have some explanation. My George case, I mean, when I told people, when I got back to Hawaii and told people about George, they said, oh, they did an investigation on you beforehand. I said, well, they didn't even know my name. I didn't give my name to anybody, and I only paid, £6 or $10 U.S. to go in the first place. I mean, how much of an investigation can you do in 20 minutes, with $10? But the debunkers always have some explanation. Another... do we have enough time for another case? Or
yes, please. Time.
One of my favorite cases is the one that was reported by Dr. Neville Wyment back in his book. I think he wrote the book in 1931, Psychic Adventures in New York. He was a Oxford professor who spoke 25 different languages, including like three dialects of Chinese. He spent two or three years in China and was in the United States to study the language of the American Indian. He was invited one day to a seance with a medium named George Valentine. Valentine had nothing to do with you know, inviting him. It was a judge and his wife who were, Judge Cannon, I think it was, William Cannon, who was a New York judge, Park Avenue, lived on Park Avenue. So they had, like, seances once every 2 weeks or so at their house, and they invited Wyman to their house to sit in on one of them. Well, he was very skeptical. He didn't think that, you know, anything was going to happen. And anyway, at that first sitting, after several other people in the circle received communications, Wyman hears this voice in Chinese coming through in a very ancient dialect. And the voice identified himself as not as Confucius, but as what Confucius's real name was, which escaped me right off the top of my head. And so Wyman, who knew this ancient dialect, or at least part of it, carried on a conversation with Confucius and asked him about some of his writings, which Confucius, explained to him. There were a couple of things that Confucius had written that, you know, didn't make sense to him or to any other scholars who had studied Confucius, and Confucius spelled it all out to him, explained it to him. And in the, Wyman sat with him another 11 times, I think it was, and in those sittings he heard, he communicated in Chinese, Persian, Basque, Sanskrit, Arabic, Portuguese, Italian, Yiddish, Hebrew, German, and Greek. Actually, 14 languages altogether that Wyman knew that he communicated in with various spirits. And so, the debunkers would say, well, Valentine must have, somehow acquired knowledge of all these languages. And Valentine was a direct voice medium, which I should have pointed out, that a direct voice, the voices actually come through, not through the medium's mouth, but through a trumpet that sort of floats around above the medium. So the medium's, or the spirits use this trumpet to amplify their voice, and the voices sound very much like they did when they were alive. And in this particular case, Dr. Wyman's wife was present, and her father came through and spoke to him in a very, or spoke to her in a very, Scottish brogue that, that she immediately recognized.
One of the things that I did notice in your book is there's very often an instance where mediums are speaking in languages that they just couldn't possibly know. But like you say, if the debunker is going to debunk, they're going to debunk. I mean, I basically look at it this way. There's that Schrodinger uncertainty principle, and he gives the example of the cat in the box. Is the cat alive or is the cat dead? Well, it depends on what you believe is going to happen when you open that door as to what really does happen. That's the uncertainty principle. So if you're sure the cat's dead, and our debunkers are, every time they open the door, the cat's dead.
Right.
It's that simple.
Right.
They're never going to find a live cat until they get out of their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Tim, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. I want everybody to know how to get a hold of you. If you have an email, the book is The Articulate Dead. Tell all of our listeners how they can reach you, where they can get your book.
Well, my email address is metgat@AOL.com. My initials and my wife's initials, metgat. But the easiest thing, you can find it if you just put my name, Michael Tim. The last name is T-Y-M-N, just rhymes with him, H-Y-M-N, into a Google search, and you'll find a couple of dozen different articles I've written there. And my blog is the first thing, and my blog directs, has my email address and so forth.
And the book, again, is The Articulate Dead, and I know you can get it at Amazon and probably lots of other places. Michael, it's been wonderful having you, and there's so many things we'd like to ask you. We'd like to ask you about ectoplasma. We'd like to ask you about these different levels. Maybe we're just going to have you back and do this again.
Sure.
But we appreciate you being here. That's for certain. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Okay, we've come to the end of another hour of Mind Matters. I want to thank all of you for being with us today, and hope you join us again next week when my guest will be Hoska Harrison. Harrison is a channel. Be sure to listen in and find out why the NBC Today Show, Seattle Times, Denver Post, Time Magazine, and many others find this man's story to be astounding. As we continue our search for the origin, nature, and permanence of consciousness, this may be yet another important chapter. Okay, it's time to say, until next time, peace be with you, and above all else, to thine own self be true. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Mind Matters with Eldon Taylor, the one show where your mind is the ultimate frontier. Remember to join him again for more riveting guests and thought-provoking discussions every Tuesday at 4 o'clock Pacific Time, right here on ContactTalkRadio.com.